After several weeks of some rather unusual and suspicious technical difficulties, I'm very happy to welcome you back to Life Without Consequence. My name is Davey Francis. I'm the host, author, and narrator of this audiobook, podcast, novel, if that's what we're calling it at this point. If this is your first time joining me here, you're probably going to be very lost, and I highly recommend you go back to the beginning and get caught up, because I'm about to spoil some things. Let's recap. Things got out of control back in Las Vegas. Parker and Benj's actions cost people their lives, and while neither of them is handling it very well, the guilt has turned Parker into a violent ball of rage. Their device had stranded them in a shipping container in Cleveland, Ohio for several days until they were accidentally rescued by a man named Tucker, who has a curiously coincidental relationship with a woman named Nina. Tucker unfortunately became the target of Parker's rage, and for a moment, it looked like he was going to kill the man, until Benj intervened by screaming at Parker to stop. The first words he'd spoken since he was 13 years old. The device is broken, and the two old friends have no leads outside of Tucker, who might not be so willing to help after the beating Parker gave him.
Still covered in pieces of Lenny McAllister, the one thing Parker and Benj need more than anything is a wash. As usual, I want to give a shout out to Hampus and Andrew McGuire, the producers on my Patreon. Thank you so much. Let's get back into the story. Welcome to Life Without Consequence.
Chapter 25, Parker and Benj. Parker dabbed at his mouth with his fingertips and saw fresh red blood. He wasn't sure if it was his blood or the kid's blood. It could just as easily have been a dried piece of Lenny that had been reactivated by his sweat. His fists ached. Between the floor of the container and the kid, he'd never thrown so many punches. Parker's heart was still racing, but he felt better, like he'd successfully worked through something. He wondered if this was the kind of thing that Nina would have called a breakthrough. "Nina," he said through a quiet breath. She was gone. Really gone, in a way that no amount of sweet-talking or apologizing could ever fix. The finality of it all came flooding back the moment she crossed his thoughts. The anger. The overwhelming need to break something. Before it could take him entirely, he noticed something. A glaring incongruence about where he thought he was. There were lights on. This warehouse had power. "Hey!" he barked, getting the attention of Benj and the kid. "How the fuck do you have electricity?" He was brash, and he knew it, but hadn't even tried to stop himself. There hadn't been many times in his life that Parker had been someone who might be described as a tough guy. Weirdly, he felt like he'd set a precedent here and needed to maintain. He thought maybe he should have just kept quiet, but it was either say something or descend into another blind rage. Benj was crouched next to the guy he'd attacked. They both glared at him with similar icy contempt. He'd bust the kid up pretty bad, and understood how he might be a little upset. There was a lot of blood on everyone. That combined with everybody's various cuts and bruises, the three men looked as though they could be the sole survivors of an old slasher movie.
"Parker, I don't think..."
Benj tried to speak, but Parker quickly cut him off.
"Oh, no, 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 no,"
he said, walking towards his friend with a silencing finger raised.
"I am in no way ready to hear you say words. I'm talking to the kid."
Benj rolled his eyes at Parker, turning away from both of them. He pulled the device out of his pocket and tried to power it on. Nothing. He couldn't even get the screen to flicker anymore. They were stuck in Cleveland, at least for the time being. He felt strange about speaking, but in a good way. Like he'd somehow relaxed a phantom fist that had been clenched for decades. Benj had never seen Parker like that before. He'd gone berserk. And Benj didn't think he'd be able to physically stop him without becoming the new target of Parker's rage. It was like his brain knew it was the only tool he had to control what was happening.
"Electricity! How do you have it?"
Parker asked aggressively. The kid pursed his lips and spat out a mouthful of bloody saliva before responding to Parker's question with whatever the opposite of enthusiasm was.
"Are you asking me how electricity works?"
Parker closed his eyes and took a breath. He was trying hard to be calm, while the entirety of him felt like a bundle of raw nerves next to an open flame. Parker felt as though he wanted something that didn't exist. that had never existed or maybe didn't exist anymore, as he did his best to organize the least aggressive response to what he thought was a stupid question. He wondered if this was what quitting smoking felt like. Except, instead of cigarettes, he was trying to break the habit of something intangible.
No, I know how electricity works.
He didn't, but that wasn't the point. We're in Cleveland, yeah? The kid half nodded and shook his head as though the answer to that question should be glaringly obvious.
Cleveland hasn't had power since the 20s, kid. What the fuck's all this?
Parker gestured up to the strip lights that tracked across the ceiling of the warehouse.
First of all, stop calling me kid,
the kid said as he tried to pull himself up to his feet. He failed as soon as he tried, lowering his head in what seemed like an attempt to hide his embarrassment. Benj pushed past Parker, who was just staring, and offered him a hand. The kid looked up at him, hesitating before accepting the assistance.
What's your name?
Benj asked as he pulled the kid up. He was obviously in pain, and seemed more than a little reticent about offering any information.
My name's Benj,
he said, gesturing to himself, then pausing for Parker to introduce himself. He didn't.
And this is
Parker, the kid said, with acid in his voice.
You said.
The kid paused as he and Parker exchanged looks.
My name's Tucker,
Tucker said to Benj, and then turned to Parker. What do you mean, since the 20s? Parker was aggravated by the question.
I mean, since the decade between 2020 and 2030.
He made sure to say it slowly, like he was speaking to a child. Particularly, a child who didn't understand the forward momentum of time. As he spoke, though, he noticed Tucker's expression change. It was almost like he was about to laugh at him. Like what Parker was saying was somehow ridiculous. Usually, that would have upset him even more. But it made something click. And he looked to Benj, who looked like he was having a very similar revelation. Benj looked around the warehouse. Up at the lights. Then behind him at the 5 shipping containers. For the first time since he'd walked out of the big metal box and stopped Parker from killing someone, Benj noticed the snake logo painted on each of them. The same logo that had appeared when he first powered on the device, and the last thing the screen had displayed before powering down.
Tucker?
Benj said with complete seriousness.
What year is it?
He expected the dumbfounded look. To anyone who hadn't just spent several days in possession of a device capable of something as ridiculous as teleportation, it was a rather dumbfounding question. The kind of thing you only hear a person say in a movie. This wasn't a movie, though, and Benj was totally serious. Tucker looked back and forth between the two of them with a raised eyebrow. It's 2023, Benj pinched at the bridge of his nose, like he was trying to preemptively ease the pain of a massive headache that hadn't arrived yet. Parker threw his arms in the air, looking like he was about to start punching something again.
What?
Tucker asked as the slightest grin appeared on his bloody face. It seemed like it was all he could do to not burst out laughing.
Seriously, what?
Benj took a deep breath and regarded Tucker with a somber expression.
You're probably not going to believe me, but I have a very strange story to tell you.
Chapter 26. Tucker. The two men stared at Tucker, waiting for him to respond. It was all very hard to digest, and it felt like every time he tried, his ribs and the lumps that had swollen upon his cheek began to throb more aggressively as a response. So, Tucker paused and made sure he had it all in order. You're telling me that in the future, where you're from, a homeless scientist gave you a cell phone teleporter that broke your fridge, got 2 people killed, and then sent you backwards in time to Cleveland. He paused to make sure the two men had no objection to this recounting of their story. But you can't show me the cell phone teleporter time machine because it's, what, out of batteries?
Well, when you say it like that, it sounds ridiculous, said Parker, sounding deflated.
It is ridiculous, Benj followed up, but it's true. Tucker eyed the two men, trying to get a read on them. They looked as though they'd very recently been through hell. The open wounds and filthy stained clothes were evidence of that. There were a lot of really horrible possibilities for what this scenario could have been, but time travelers just wasn't something Tucker was ready to believe.
They both looked like they bought entirely into the story they were telling, though. Tucker remembered something he heard on TV once about how crazy people didn't think they were crazy. They thought it was the rest of the world that had lost its mind. So, he paused, trying to figure out exactly how to phrase it. So this is all blood. You're actually covered in blood.
It was an accident, Benj responded defiantly.
There was absolute conviction in his voice. It was convincing. Where do you fit into all of this, Tucker? Parker asked, suspiciously. There was something so forced about the way Parker was behaving. Tucker felt like he was talking to a cartoon character who'd been written as overtly aggressive. There was no doubt that the guy could throw a solid punch, but his attitude came off like he was doing a bit. What do you mean? Tucker responded. It was a confusing situation, and he hoped neither of them would pick up on him being evasive.
I mean this, Parker gestured with his hands around the warehouse. How is it that you have the keys to this place, but you don't have a clue about it?
Tucker gulped and tried to buy himself a little time to think. He had no idea who these people were, and only saw admitting to complete strangers that he'd just robbed a cop as adding to his perpetually expanding list of problems. They didn't look like law-abiding citizens. In fact, they both looked like they were on drugs. But that didn't mean he could trust them. I just found a set of keys outside and got curious, he told the first lie that popped into his head. Parker regarded him suspiciously, and then looked at Benj, who just shrugged noncommittally. Seriously, the keys are numbered. I just tried the container that matched. It wasn't entirely untrue. Tucker pulled out the key and offered it to them, in an attempt to give his white lie a little more color. He wondered how these two were connected to Brendan, and why he had them locked in a shipping container. The cop was definitely dangerous. But then again, so was Parker. These two men didn't seem like bad guys in the same way Brendan had, though. They seemed as confused as he was. The two men examined the key, and it occurred to Tucker that Brendan would 100% have realized what he'd done by now. He put himself in the crooked police officer's shoes for a moment, and decided that if he'd lost keys to a room he had two men locked in, checking on their security would be pretty high on his list of priorities.
We have to get out of here, like, now, Tucker said suddenly.
Parker and Benj had been quietly bickering, something that appeared to be a regular occurrence between the two.
Why?
Parker said suspiciously. Tucker shook his head. His distaste for the man had started to solidify.
Because someone left you two here locked inside of a metal box and then lost their keys. If I were them, I'd be coming back to check on you as soon as I realized.
Tucker and Parker stared each other down.
Or you can go back in the box. I don't really care either way. But given the state of you two, I don't want to meet the person who put you in there. So I'm leaving. You want to come?
Tucker's heart thudded hard a few times. He wasn't sure how asserting himself with Parker would go. But thankfully, the man diverted to his friend, who shrugged in a way that suggested he was on board. And then Parker did something strange. In Benj's direction, he flicked his thumb off of his chin, and then drew both of his hands in front of his stomach, gesturing as though he was grabbing at a rope.
Did he just use sign language? Tucker snapped before they could pass any more secret notes.
He does that, sometimes, Benj replied, shooting Parker a look that was more conspiratorial than Tucker was comfortable with. He just said he could use a drink. Tucker didn't understand sign language, but he didn't think the signs Parker had used meant anything quite so innocuous. He regarded the man with the same suspicion he'd received until Parker spoke.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's get going. Lead on.
Parker pointed towards the door and shot Tucker a wink. He'd only known Parker for 20 minutes, but had already firmly decided that he didn't like him. Pressing his weight against the door, Tucker paused for a moment. Thinking things through wasn't exactly one of his fortes, but his instinct of self-preservation had piped up and begged him to consider how much worse this situation could get. I thought we were leaving, Parker called impatiently from behind him. The day had been a continual downward spiral, but Tucker decided he was in too deep to turn back now, and pushed open the door. Accidentally, in order of bloody to bloodiest, the three men made their way out of the itinerant storage building and into the frosty Cleveland winter.
Chapter 27. Nina.
Nina had a bad feeling. She got them occasionally, usually when the weather was about to take a turn. From the clouds coming off of Lake Erie, It definitely looked as though something rough was on its way to the city. But she couldn't stop herself from thinking that this particular feeling stemmed from something far more troublesome than lake effect snow. Nina stubbed out her cigarette and walked inside from the front porch. She'd sworn to her boyfriend Brendan that she would quit, but not until New Year's Day. She wanted to enjoy her few remaining weeks as a smoker without any pressure. Brendan hadn't ever mentioned that he didn't like her smoking, and hadn't seemed to care much about her announcement to quit. She'd only told him about her plans to say it out loud, to say the words to someone so that she could feel accountable. Nina carried the cigarette butt inside to the kitchen, ran cold water on it, and then dropped it into the garbage can under the sink. She used to smoke inside, but decided that had to stop when Brendan had moved in a couple of years prior. It was the first of many changes to happen in a place that Nina had fallen in love with from the very first moment she'd seen it. It was the lower level of one of Cleveland's many weird duplexes. Each of the rooms had its own unusual quirks that gave the whole apartment a personality that she hadn't experienced in other places she'd lived. The dining room had its high ceiling, the kitchen was octagonal, and their bedroom was always dead quiet. Nina never once heard the upstairs neighbors moving around, and once the door was closed, you couldn't hear anything from the rest of the apartment. This had some downsides, though. She was constantly startled by finding Brendan in the kitchen after not hearing him come through the front door. Her home was weird, and she loved it. Nina had been so scared about Brendan moving in with her. She'd wanted him to feel welcome, but at the same time, she didn't want to change anything. She could be stubborn like that. Thankfully, though, he didn't seem to mind. Brendan just asked for a little area of the apartment that he could call his. Nina was happy to give him the guest room as, of all the rooms, it was the only one she didn't really like. Everything about Brendan moving in had gone smoothly, except for one unnerving request he'd made about the guest room that would now be his office. He'd been adamant about his privacy and asked that she never go inside without his permission. It was strange, and Nina was a little suspicious at first, but as their relationship flourished upon them moving in together, that suspicion vanished. In their time together, he'd never given her a reason not to trust him, so she respected his space. Tucker, on the other hand, had never given her a reason to start trusting him. Going all the way back to high school, Tucker was only ever looking out for Tucker, and it never changed. She hadn't told anyone, but Nina was actually relieved when he announced his plans to leave town. Nina had been considering ending things, but Tucker had done that for her. His brazen assumption that she would just follow him, no questions asked, had helped to shatter any illusions she might have had about any sort of future for the two of them. After he left, there was the occasional text or email, some half-hearted check-in via social media. But for the most part, Nina stopped hearing from Tucker when he left for the coast. She liked it that way. What she didn't like was him showing up on her doorstep after being gone for years looking to crawl into bed with her. He hadn't said that explicitly, but she'd known him since she was a teenager. He didn't have to spell it out. Truth be told, though, the whole encounter hadn't bothered her that much at all. It was an unwanted surprise, but not the kind of thing she was about to let ruin her whole week. Brendan, on the other hand, hadn't felt quite so dismissive, and had blown up over the abrupt social call. He'd stomped and yelled and puffed up his chest, but Nina didn't see what the fuss was all about. She'd handled it. Apparently, that wasn't enough for Brendan, who had retreated to his office for the rest of the night. He hadn't come to bed, and he was gone when she woke up in the morning. She hated waking up alone. But as she straightened the sheets out, Nina couldn't help laughing to herself about how much easier it made making the bed. It was her day off, and now that she'd completed her morning rituals, she could get out of the house and on with the rest of the day's tasks. As Nina leaned into her closet to reach for a jacket, a chill made its way through her. The bad feeling was back, and along with it came the unmistakable sense of being watched. She immediately withdrew from the closet to find Brendan standing in the bedroom doorway. She didn't even know he was in the house. "Oh my God, babe, you scared me," she said, laughing nervously. He didn't reply. He didn't do anything. Her heart raced slightly as she tossed the jacket onto the bed and moved to welcome him home with a hug. But Brendan's arms stayed pinned at his side. He hadn't moved an inch. Nina furrowed her brow at him and offered a puzzled smile. Looking at him now, she could see that he didn't look well. His face was flushed, and there was something strange about his skin. It looked puffy, like it was returning to normal after being swollen. Nina leaned away from her lover, regarding him with concern as she gently rubbed his shoulders.
"Babe, are you okay? You don't look so good," she said.
Finally, Brendan moved, taking both of her wrists in his hands. Tenderly at first, but then his grip tightened until it gradually became painful.
"Brendan, let me go,"
she demanded, but his grip only got tighter. She struggled, but couldn't break his grasp.
"You're hurting me, let go!"
She shook with all her might to pull away from him, but he just held her there, staring down with dead, lifeless eyes as he walked her back into the bedroom, kicking the door closed behind him. Nina screamed for help, even though she knew the bedroom held her cries inside of it, as tight as the grip she felt around her wrists. Chapter 28, Parker and Benj. There was a lot about what was happening that Parker was struggling to deal with. Trauma response had gotten to work pretty quickly, doing what it could to wall his grief in about Nina behind an unpredictable patchwork of new aggressive and violent tendencies. This was good, he thought. While the new flourishes to his personality might not be to everyone's taste, they were a fantastic distraction away from actually dealing with his problems. One problem he had directly in front of him, though, was Benj's sudden decision to start talking. He'd searched through his mind for a word that accurately described how hearing his voice made him feel, but there wasn't one. At least, not one Parker knew. For 12 years, Parker had taken in stride Benj's response to witnessing his brother's death. Not once had he complained about having to learn sign language, or all the times he'd needed someone to talk to. Not just talk at, actually talk to. Now, all of a sudden, Benj was just a regular motor mouth, and while it was probably the result of a lot of other things, it pissed Parker off. He watched Tucker slip out through the heavy emergency door and seized an opportunity for some alone time, grabbing Benj's arm before he could follow Tucker outside.
"Well, you were awfully chatty back there," Parker said.
Benj looked deflated. He knew this conversation was coming. He just thought Parker might have waited until they had even the slightest idea of what was going on.
"Parker, you wouldn't stop hitting him. I was trying to save his life."
Benj's voice was deeper than Parker had expected. The last time he'd heard Benj say words, they were both standing on the precipice of puberty. Neither of them had begun showing the transitional squeaks or cracks that would eventually lead Parker into the gruff bark that didn't seem to have an off switch.
"So you talk for the first time in 12 years to save some asshole you've never met, but you can't say a word about Nina?"
Benj glared at him with contention.
"How dare you say something like that? There was nothing either of us could do. You saw what came through that door."
He had seen it, and just the thought of it made him shudder. There were words that existed in the English language that perfectly described what they'd seen at the house. Giant, creature, monster. But they were also rooted in fiction and stories that it was embarrassing for either of them to say out loud. The fuel behind Parker's outburst burned out quickly and led them to an awkward silence the two men used to briefly contemplate their new roles. Parker looked at the ground with his hands dug deep in his pockets, like, if he reached deep enough, he might find something in them to say. He wasn't upset with Benj. It would have made the way he felt much easier to explain if it were as simple as that. But it just wasn't true. Benj reached out a hand, placing it on his friend's shoulder.
"Parker, are you okay?" he asked sincerely.
Parker pulled his hands from his pockets and opened his palms to reveal an assortment of pills in each one. They both snorted out a hollow laugh as they examined the find.
"No, I most definitely am not," he said, looking up and regarding Benj with a sense of very genuine sadness. "But I'm hoping this helps."
And Parker popped two pills in his mouth, dry swallowing them with a grimace. Benj shook his head, still laughing at how it all stays the same, even when everything changes.
"This is weird," Benj said.
"Very," Parker confirmed. Then they bumped fists and followed Tucker outside. It was all well and good committing to the idea that the device had done something as insane as sending them backwards in time from inside of the warehouse. It was all just trusting an assumption until there was concrete evidence to back it up. It wasn't until Parker and Benj finally stepped outside that the magnitude of what was happening to them became a reality. After the things they'd seen in the past week, it was hard to believe they could be fazed by anything. But this was dizzying. A total sensory overload. All it took was a moment outside to wash away any doubts they might have had. Parker and Benj gawked at this new, old world that surrounded them, with awestruck grins painted across their faces. They took deep breaths of air that, for the first time either of them could remember, didn't taste like chemicals. There was a certain calm to the world around them. It was a stark comparison to the world they'd come from, which always felt like it was so busy and begging to be put out of its misery. Parker looked up and down the street that the itinerant building stood on. It was empty and so quiet. He couldn't remember a time in his life when there weren't the sounds of people nearby. Even as a kid, when he went to bed at night, he could hear the hum of conversations happening nearby through the paper-thin walls of the home he and his mother had lived in. The closest he ever got to quiet in Las Vegas was plugging his ears under the water in the bath, but he couldn't remember the last time he was able to afford enough hot water to fill the tub. "Where the fuck is everyone?" Parker asked curiously. "What do you mean?" Tucker replied. Parker looked to Benj, visually checking in on whether or not he'd just asked a stupid question. He hadn't. Benj breathed a sigh of relief, seeing that Parker had started to be mildly cautious about his behavior. The streets were peaceful. The hum of Las Vegas had for so long been constant background noise for Parker and Benj that this new calm was jarring. There were no burnt-out cars or throngs of poor and unfortunate souls begging for dollar bills or trying to sell you garbage. "I mean people, man. Where are they?" Tucker seemed genuinely confused by the question, then cracked the slightest of smiles and offered his opinion. "Ah, it makes sense. Overpopulation's probably a big problem in the future." There was something about Tucker's response that caught Benj's attention. It was as if he was sharing some hilarious inside joke with himself. Benj hadn't done much talking, but he knew how to listen, and he caught it straight away. Tucker was openly mocking them, but did it with the kind of confidence a person only accrues through practice and regularly getting away with it. It was a perplexing move considering not 30 minutes ago, Parker had nearly beaten him to death. He was playing with fire, and there was something about Tucker's whole vibe that Benj felt unsettlingly familiar. He just couldn't quite put his finger on what it was. "Yeah, there's people everywhere, man. I fucking hate it," Parker replied, missing any venom Tucker's statement had been laced with. "It's why people don't leave the towers." "The towers?" Tucker responded, this time without the sarcasm. He seemed legitimately curious. "You see those buildings?" Parker pointed towards two tall buildings, rising up above the skeletal trees of the neighborhood. "It's like that, but 30 stories higher, and filled with 15 neighborhoods worth of people. They got parks and pools, fresh air, fucking hot water, TV, internet. They get coffee, man. Real, non-imitation coffee." As words started to pour freely out of him, Parker noticed he was beginning to feel speedy again. Those pills had kicked in just as quickly as before, and he found himself suddenly with the desire to describe 45 years of future socio-political history in explicit detail. Benj felt a reflexive desire to shut Parker's speech down before it gained any momentum, but instead decided to let Parker have a moment. Benj was more interested in paying attention to Tucker. It had been pretty apparent that their new friend hadn't taken their story too seriously, and Benj was trying to find some evidence proving that they could trust him. The gravity of their situation continued gaining weight with every passing minute, and Benj was beginning to realize how badly they needed someone's help. He just didn't know if that someone was Tucker. He'd agreed to let them come with him, but it was more than likely that that decision had just been a symptom of his own urgent desire to leave the itinerant warehouse. It was either he continued bickering with them or let them tag along. There was a mutual suspicion between both parties, but Benj was almost sure their new companion knew more about what was going on than he had let on. Benj studied the micro-expressions and waited for a moment he could challenge him for more information. "So why don't you live in the towers?" Tucker asked, following Parker's rather influential sales pitch on how fabulous they were. Parker glanced at Benj, and then back at Tucker. "Do we look like the kind of people who have pool access?" Tucker, who didn't look much more presentable than either Parker or Benj, took the opportunity to be openly disgusted. "No, you look like serial killers," he said candidly. Immediately, Benj observed Tucker's expression shift to panic. He looked so badly like he wanted to buy back the words that had just left his mouth. He'd managed to disguise the snark earlier behind what Parker perceived as actual interest. But Tucker hadn't been so careful this time, and Parker didn't appear pleased. "What did you just say?" Parker asked with a threatening tone. "Nothing, man," Tucker said as Benj watched him try to figure out how he could get himself out of this hole. "I was just saying, you know, all the blood. It kind of looks..." Parker just stared at him for what Tucker probably perceived as an eternity. Benj knew what was happening and struggled not to crack before Parker was satisfied. Parker approached the very nervous Tucker and rested his hand on his shoulder. "You know what?" he said with the same severity. Tucker's breath audibly quivered right before Parker's stern glare morphed into a smile. "I'm fucking with you. We look like dog shit," Parker laughed, entirely amused with himself, while Tucker let out a groaning sigh of relief. "Hey, what about here? Does Cleveland have towers?" Tucker asked after regaining his composure. He was curious in a way that seemed as though he might be coming around to their story. "I told you," Parker replied, offering open palms as consolation. "Cleveland doesn't even have electricity."
"What does that even mean?" he asked with a tone that brushed up against frustrated.
Parker regarded him hesitantly, mentally considering the implications of explaining the future to someone. "Look, I don't know what I'm allowed to say, you know, butterfly effects and all." He looked at Benj for some guidance, only receiving one of his friend's regular shrugs in reply.
"It was way before my time. There was this earthquake that happened in the 20s that left most of the Midwest without power. It never gets fixed, and..."
He trailed off, turning to Benj wearing a kind of shocked curiosity. Parker and Benj had spent so much time with one another that they occasionally had pseudo-telepathic conversations. Sometimes they would just know they were thinking the exact same thing. And this was one of those times. What they were thinking, what mentioning the dates of the Cleveland earthquakes had prompted them to consider was,
"Wait, you don't think we have anything to do with it, do you?"
Parker asked. Benj quickly shook his head. He didn't want to even entertain the idea and reflexively flicked his thumb off of his chin, punctuating his lack of interest in the topic. Being so close to the thumb-biting of Shakespearean prose, it was a sign that could easily have been misconstrued by someone without the knowledge of sign language. But Parker knew what it meant. It was a straightforward and very stern, "Don't." It wasn't that he thought the idea was ridiculous. Quite the contrary. Everything he had experienced over the last few days had taught Benj that if things could, they almost certainly would get much worse. He didn't presently possess the mental fortitude to begin considering that he and Parker might have something to do with one of the biggest natural disasters to ever occur in American history. So he unequivocally declined to go into it. "All right, one of you needs to explain the sign language," Tucker intervened. He was right. There was already a degree of mutual distrust between the two parties, and the occasional passing of nonverbal notes wasn't helping anything. Parker decided to rip the band-aid off.
"Okay, man, here's the story. You know, back there at the warehouse, when Benj told me to stop hitting you... By the way, have I apologized for that yet?"
Parker suddenly deviated, once again under the influence of the meds. They were making him much more pleasant, if not more easily distracted. "No, you haven't," Tucker replied, unenthusiastically, snorting what was almost undoubtedly errant blood back up into his sinuses.
"Well, I'm sorry. That was super fucked up of me, and you seem like a nice guy. I shouldn't have done it. You just caught me at an off time, all right?"
Tucker's eyes narrowed as he glanced at Benj for some clarity. "Why is he talking like he's on drugs?" Benj tried not to smile.
"Because he is."
Tucker pressed his hands to his head in frustration.
"I just can't with you guys. I can't believe I was actually starting to take this all seriously. You're not time travelers. You're just wasted."
"Hey,"
Parker protested.
"Why can't we be both?"
Tucker began shaking his head and muttering,
"This is all a dream. A bad, bad dream. I'm still on the bus. None of this is happening."
"Tucker," Parker said, regaining his attention. "Do you want to be wasted too? Would that help?"
He dug around in his pockets again and produced another palmful of colorful medicines. The red ones go up, the blue ones go down. I don't know what the green or purple ones do, so stay away from those.
Tucker looked at him suspiciously while Benj rolled his eyes.
Unless this isn't your thing, but you look like you could use something to take the edge off.
Without saying anything, Tucker took a blue and a red pill and popped them both in his mouth.
Attaboy, Parker said. Now how much further? It's fucking freezing.
Artwork for Life Without Consequence was provided by Daniel Sewell. You can find him on Twitter at WriterDanSewell. Music for Life Without Consequence was provided by me, Davey Francis. You can find more of my music and my photography at DaveyFrancis.com. If you'd like to get a few episodes ahead, please visit patreon.com/DaveyFrancis, where there are several tiered options for you to get more access to the story.